Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
So my name is Michael Hawk. I'm retired Special Forces, kind of everything. I've done a whole bunch of stuff in the media and in the military, but most people know me as a survival guy.
Absolutely. And can we just jump straight into some of the questions? Because you were very humble in describing yourself. So not only is he an author, he's a television host, television producer, special forces, so military hero. I wasn't aware how long you've been in the military until you sent me over your information. Okay. Yeah. You look young. You look very young.
Okay. So I'll just give you guys a quick technical skinny version, right? So I was a special forces medic, which is like a jungle doctor, and I'm currently a licensed national and state paramedic, so I keep my skills up. I was also a special forces radio operator, which is like guys doing Morse code and doing hacking and, you know, HF antenna theory. And I'm also currently licensed as an FCC radio operator. I was also a special forces intelligence guy, which then led to me kind of studying a whole bunch of languages, getting rated in 7 languages, paid for 3, which was the max the military allowed. And I still keep up those skills a little bit, but I'll share a little bit more on that because I work right now with Special Operations Command, and I'm the lead guy making a language translation device that works as well as a human, completely without the internet, without the cloud, and is small enough to hold in your hand. It's pretty revolutionary. So that's the language. Then I was also a special forces officer. So after 9/11 happened, I went back in, went through all the training and did that. And then I officially retired in 2011, but I'm technically still what they call a gray area retiree. So technically I'm still in, I still get saluted when I go through the gate. I still have a top secret clearance. And I'm, like I said, an advisor for Special Operations Command. I get to work with active duty special ops guys from all 4 branches. And I get to deploy with active duty special forces guys. And we're kind of like Q for James Bond. We make gadgets for them with my little team of special ops guys and PhD engineers. So that's kind of what makes it all relevant and pretty cool technical stuff. But I've also been in 9 different conflicts. So that gave me a lot of experience. And yes, I have been around a while, hence the cotton top, you know, old crusty guy. But thankfully, I got all my bits and pieces and I can still contribute to the next generation. So, and that's my passion, is helping, sharing, and teaching. So, and as he mentioned, I've got about 50 TV shows. I got a film. I've got about a dozen books, currently working on a book with a British weather expert on extreme weather survival. And I think I need to pause and take a break there. Hopefully your ears aren't
fun. I actually follow your stuff. And we have in our household, we call it the Y2K closet. And there's quite a few things that I've seen on your thing that I went and I ordered on Amazon and put in there.
Nice.
But thank you for that direction for survival stuff. So do you mind if we just jump right into some student questions? Because I already got some emailed to me from before. I know that some of you had signed up to connect with Michael in the fall, but we had big old bad hurricanes because he's down there in the south and they get those there. But one of the kids, they wanted to know, who did you look up to most growing up?
That's a brilliant question, guys. So I came from a pretty broken family. And I published that in some of my books, the kind of the backstory. It was hard where I even at like 14, I had to survive for a winter on the streets, right? So not having a father figure or a role model, I actually looked to cartoons, comic books, which aren't as prevalent as they were back in those days before the interweb, y'all, when we only had 3 TV stations that went off at midnight. Yes. So comic book heroes and films, you know, so I used those as role models to pick and choose what I thought were what I deemed the best kind of person to be. Right. But then as I hit a pretty pivotal point in my life where I've been shot, I've been stabbed before I ever joined the military. I had friends that were like going to jail for murder and were being murdered because we were surviving on the streets. It was gang stuff, right? So there were one particular person, a fellow by the name of Earl, who was retired cop and fireman, and he saw me on the streets and he helped me out, and he became a hero and role model for me. And he was also a Marine in the Korean War. And then another fellow in my young Special Forces years was a Vietnam fellow, 2 of them, matter of fact, Vietnam Special Forces, that both did great things. And they both took me under their wing. So My role models were not necessarily the traditional of your family, like an uncle or something like that. It was the people that I encountered in my life that I felt were really good people, that I wanted to be more like them. So hopefully that answers you.
No, that absolutely does. Thank you so much. Rolling along, because I got quite a few questions emailed to me, but okay. We have Lucas here. Lucas is in, I believe, Italy. Correct me if I'm wrong. You can unmute. Go ahead and ask your question, Lucas.
Okay. So, hi. Yeah, I'm from Italy. And I would like to know what advice you could give to someone who wants to work in the language department for the U.S. military.
Okay. So that's a very broad spectrum question. I'll try to give you a real succinct answer. So in the military, we primarily have two types of linguists that are serving, right? The people who do the talking, like the interviews and whatnot, and then the people who do the listening. So, and the people who speak better end up becoming the people that do the talking. But then all throughout government, there's lots of need for language skills, language capability. So you could become a foreign area officer, you could become a military attaché, you could become a subject matter expert, or you can work on the back end where you work in places for the government where they need that particular language skill. So basically, there's no limit to what you can do and where you can go and work if you're interested in pursuing languages with the government.
Wonderful answer. Did you practice that? That's incredible.
No, man, I'm a super geek, really. I'm always reading.
I should also add, he is a public speaker too. So he does a lot of different stuff. So moving right along, one of the kids, there was a kid in France had emailed this question in the fall, and they wanted to know, what is your most proud moment, professionally speaking, with all the things that you have done in your career? If you had to pick one.
Yeah, that's a brilliant question. And it could just be because it's what I'm doing right now. But you know, on a personal level, my family is my biggest accomplishment, my biggest point of pride, right? But on a professional level, which was the question, I think what I'm doing right now, the making of this language translation device, guys. So just so you understand, I'm creating a device that not only will speak major languages like, you know, Russian, Chinese, and Arabic, but also minor languages, so that when we deploy and we go meet with these indigenous people within 30 to 90 days, we can be speaking to them in their native tongue, right? So that's what they call low density languages. And then on top of that, I'm adding capabilities to it so that we're working right now to make the device able to translate the visual environment, not like Google, but real time as you're walking or driving, so that you can read all the signs around you as well when you're abroad as you can while you're at home. And on top of that, this device can also detect accents origins. So if I'm in Ukraine, for example, and speaking to someone in Ukrainian, but my machine says their accent's from Moscow, I know that that's pretty important, right? So, but what I love about the device that we're working on is not that it's for special ops. This thing is not classified. And once we make this in the next year or so, then it will quickly go to the rest of the military, and then it will go to the civilians. And then if more people in the world are talking, my hope is that less people will be fighting. And in that, I have to say that this is probably my most proud professional achievement, if I can make it happen.
I mean, that could potentially save countless lives. I mean, even yes. Like Peter J. Dewey in Vietnam, we had a guest here who was with Peter Dewey when he was assassinated in Vietnam, and it was a linguistic misunderstanding. And so just incredible stuff. We have a guest next week who's one of the trailblazers of artificial intelligence. So this is all exciting stuff how we're combining your passion with technology, and the fact that it's not connected to the internet is a huge deal when you're out in the field. That's unheard of.
Yeah. So just so you guys can kind of put it in perspective, right? For the super geeks out there, it takes a lot of compute to do language like a human. Our brains are still more powerful than some of the most powerful machines out there. But AI, as you guys probably know, is coming really quickly behind us. So, but that said, the big thing about this with the language and helping other people is that if everybody's talking, hopefully nobody's fighting or less people are fighting. But for the special ops guys, you got to understand, You know, for 20 years, we've been fighting in the desert, right? And we've had to rely on interpreters because speaking Pashto from one mountain range to the next or Dari could be very, very different. So we had to have interpreters. But now, if as we're, you know, facing other challenges from more advanced countries, the reliance of guys on interpreters is a risk to the team. So if the guys can just use a little device and not have to worry about a translator manipulating or getting what they said wrong or being captured and turning on them, it's a big safety factor, right? So this whole thing, they told me it could not be done for 5 to 7 years. And because I broke some rules and I changed some metrics, we were able to jump this thing forward. And that's why I've got prototypes out there working now. They're being very successful. And so, yeah, this kind of thing, it is a game changer. And that's where like all my experience and my conflicts and my diverse background, it all just kind of fell into place and came together. This wasn't a plan. And so my advice for you guys is do what you love, follow your heart, believe in what you're after. You don't know where it's going to take you, but that's the biggest part of the journey, right? Is you don't know. And then you never know when all of it's going to come together. And then now when you're old and crusty like me and you look back and you're like, oh, this thing that happened and that thing that was a pain in the butt and this really great thing and that really awful thing, they all came together to make you able to do more than you ever thought possible by yourself. So I hope that inspires you guys.
No, absolutely. I mean, you're truly in essence, a Renaissance man, the things that you have done, which is a very uncommon thing, especially nowadays. People are always just, can you speak, and this comes from me, I have like maybe two or three more student questions, I'm gonna let you go, but this is a question from me. Can you talk to the kids about like learning about the world around you, the importance of that, and not just only being an expert on one thing, because you essentially almost became an expert on a few different things between video production, video direction, script writing, military, linguistics, now technology. I wasn't even aware of that. What drives you? What advice can you impart on them as far as learning about the world around them?
Okay, that's a brilliant question. So I'll try to encapsulate a philosophy in a nutshell. You know, like I said, follow your heart, do what attracts you, because if you're loving what you're doing, you're really not working, right? So, but the biggest thing is that when you do things that you love, you learn things that you did not know. And the more you learn what you don't know, the more you realize how much you don't know. And then the more you begin to learn that everything and everyone is connected. And once you realize that, then no knowledge becomes useless. No information becomes irrelevant. Everything ultimately can be brought together. So my thought to you would be never turn down an opportunity to learn anything, no matter what it is, even if you don't care for it, because you will get some personal direct benefit and you'll find a way to turn that benefit around for others as well.
Would you say like, because sometimes I know when I was younger, and especially when I was a classroom teacher, now I'm virtual, where kids get intimidated when they say, oh man, like learning an entire language, that's a lot to learn. Would you say it's kind of like a marathon mentality where you take it 1 mile at a time? You know, the journey of a million miles beginning with one step. Is that how you kind of, where as long as you're making some sort of forward progress, that's the best approach for learning any new thing?
I think that's a very wonderful philosophy for life in general, right? Just live it one day at a time, moment to moment. Try to be in the moment, guys, which that sounds all foo-foo, but I'm here to tell you as an old crusty guy, it's so powerful. Most of the time when we're sitting in a group of people, we're thinking about what we got to do, what we just did, what we're worried about, and we're not truly present in the moment, feeling the emotions from the other people around us and sharing in that moment, right? So yes, look at everything like it's a journey, and don't think of it like, I just want to rush to the end. I just want to get to the destination. Just say, you know what? It's going to take a while, so I'm going to enjoy it, and just do what you can as you can. Always set higher standards, higher goals than you think you can achieve. So if you stop short, you're still higher up than this, right? But also don't beat yourself up when you don't hit those goals, because you know you set a nearly impossible goal. So the real secret sauce is just find out what you believe in, follow your passions, do what you love, and take your time, because it is a journey that's just as important as the end state. And don't ever think about an end state, because your journey's never going to be over until you stop breathing. So like people say, oh, when you're going to retire, it's like when I'm pushing up daisies, because I want to make every day of my life matter, right? I wake up and I say, thank you for another day of my life, and help me to be a better person and do something to try to make the world a bit better. And when you approach it like that, man, it's never a challenge. It actually becomes a passion and a pleasure.
Amen. Amen. And do you mind if we go with two more student questions? I'm going to let you go.
Guys, no, go hot. I'm here. I'll tell you when I tap out. You know, I was like, okay.
No, we got some kids who are in Eastern Europe. It's a little later for them.
Oh, but, yeah. Let's knock them out by time zones.
No, you're fine. So, one of the kids, they had emailed this question a while back. They wanted to know what motivated you to make that jump from military to television and film. How did that happen?
Yeah. Okay, guys, it's a brilliant question. Very logical one to ask. I would love to say that I'm a genius and that it was a plan and I'm really smart and that was my goal. It was all an accident, guys. Okay. So, skinny anecdote. After Desert Storm, when I was a medic in Special Forces and I felt that I didn't really get the true combat experience that I was looking for, I went out looking for more war experience. And in those days before 9/11, people didn't know about contracting. So it was very small niche, you know, word of mouth and your reputation only. So I did a CIA contract in a war zone. It was very, very intense. And so after a year of that, I decided, okay, and it was medical stuff, guys. I was doing medical stuff in a war zone. And I decided, okay, I need something for my guys to decompress, to become more human, because you can be a bit vicious with that kind of intense combat for that long. So I started a kids camp in Costa Rica. Just so happened a year later, MTV Road Rules was coming through in Central America. And they, you know, found us and asked us to help them make a show. And then they got to talking to me and said, hey, would you mind being on camera and teach the kids? I'm like, sure. Then they said, hey, would you mind being on camera and capture the kids? I'm like, you're going to pay me to be mean to kids? Okay. You know? And so I did the thing and they really liked me and I really liked them, because unlike a lot of media people, the production crews are like special operations teams. They're all weirdos who are very good at what they do, can go far crazy places and make amazing things happen with little to nothing. So I became friends with them and I started doing more stuff as a crew member, like being a medic and a translator and security. And then they offered me a job as a producer for ABC. And so I actually lived in LA with my two, at the time, teenage sons as a single dad when 9/11 happened. And I was a producer for ABC and I had a choice to stay out of the war or go fight the war. My sons, when I asked them, it's like, this is a family decision. They said, dad, go fight bad guys. So that's what I did. So that's how it all happened. And when I got back from the war after a couple of years, of course, the Green Berets were all in the news because they were riding on horseback in Afghanistan. So I got asked to be a subject matter expert for a few shows. And then they said, hey, man, you know, what'd you do if you could make your own show? So I came up with Man, Woman, Wild, Dude, You're Screwed, Naked and Afraid, One Man Army, all those created by me. And that's how I ended up getting into media. So it was by far not a plan. It was a fluke.
And my personal favorite, you were on The Men Who Built America and The Frontiersman. I love that one. And I've watched it a number of times because I'm big into history. But
I just did another one for them, the third season with Kelsey Grammer, where they interviewed. Oh, yeah. Yep. So I just finished that. And I also just finished that HBO show. So those will be coming out this summer.
Yeah, that's The Last of Us. You guys can check that out on HBO, but if you're old enough. So, one of our kids, they wanted to know if you had to pick one thing that you have been on, what is your favorite project that you've worked on?
Hands down.
Television or film? Television or film.
Hands down with my wife, Man, Woman, Wild. She is amazing woman. She is tougher than me. She showed me things that I would have never thought of doing. And that's when I learned, you got to listen to everybody's opinion because you never know where a good idea is going to come from. And just because you're an expert in something doesn't mean you know it all, or doesn't mean that you have necessarily the best or only solution. So working with my wife, while it was really hard, I mean, she cried most episodes because we did risk our lives to make a real, genuine show. But I'm also proud of the fact that we broke a lot of records. We did things that had never been done. For example, guys, in 22 episodes, I taught how to make a fire 22 different ways. And most people won't recognize that, but that alone is a feat, right? So yeah, that would be my favorite and one I'm most proud of.
That is incredible. Just out of curiosity, what is the weirdest place? Like, because you were doing like television stuff with 9/11, like you had been on television at some point. Did you ever get recognized when you went overseas to fight? Where, like, were there some weird places or random places that you would be recognized?
I had only done a few shows before, you know, I went off to do Afghanistan, right? So it wasn't really a worry for me then. And like I said, the internet was just kind of getting started as well, right? I kind of remember those days. So no, the recognition wasn't there. But like last year, I did probably the biggest show that Discovery's ever made in India, called India's Ultimate Warrior. And of course, my warrior won, which meant me as the mentor won. And it had like their version of Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise as a host and a guest. So it was really, really big show. And I'm working with Shifu, who is one of the other mentors, who is one of the finest martial artists I've ever met in my life. And interestingly enough, we both kind of study and teach the same techniques, which was awesome. But my point here is, my show, our show, Man, Woman, Wild, has not come off the air in India for the last 10 years, which I didn't know, right? So when I got there, you know, Michael Hawk with the dark hair and no beard was known by everyone. I'm working for 2 weeks with this, with Shifu. And then over dinner one night, he's like, Michael Hawk, are you the guy from Man, Woman, Wild? And I'm like, yeah, brother. And he's like, oh my God, you know, I grew up watching you. I love you. And then he kissed my hand in a very humbling way. And it was just funny to me because he said, but your visage is so different now. So, And I love it. My wife loves it. I never thought I'd live this long, guys. So I'm very happy to be old and crusty. You know, got bits and pieces falling off me every day, but thankfully I can still keep moving. But yeah, so I haven't really been recognized a whole lot. But also, I try to be a gray man and just blend and not speak about it. Like, so that's just my way, guys. Because I worked around so many humans that are much more amazing than me. I can't ever let an ego be around because there's just no place for it. I know I do okay, but there are so many great humans out there and I'm just humbled and proud to be working with and around them. So yeah, I don't get recognized a whole lot and I actually kind of like it.
That's awesome. And please thank Ruth for her contribution. You know, wonderful contribution to society. And thank you for your service and your contribution. He is being very humble and modest. He's also a black belt in judo and what is it? Aikido. What else?
Yeah. So anyways. When I was a young special forces soldier, you know, you fighting is part of your job, right? As well as winning hearts and minds and treating people and building hospitals and schools and all that. Sometimes we have to fight bad guys. So I wanted to have those hand to hand skills that I felt I needed. So I studied things like, you know, Kenpo karate, Wushu, Kung Fu, Wing Chun, Kung Fu. But when I discovered Aikido, it really resonated with me. I call it like the thinking person's martial art, because it's all about technique, not brute strength, right? But also to get a good foundation in Aikido, you had to have a foundation in judo. So I think I ended up becoming like a fifth belt in judo and a sixth degree in Aikido. But, you know, I just love to teach and those allow me to teach more people. But yeah, that's my martial arts background.
Well, thank you for spending time with us and teaching us today. Before we let you go, and we're definitely going to continue to keep up with your career. But before we let you go, is there any advice that you can give to these kids as they go off into the world and figure out what they want to do? Maybe speak a little bit about persevering through adversity. Because I know we have some older kids who are looking to go to college and stuff like that and go on to the next chapter of their lives. So whatever advice you could impart.
Absolutely. So guys, here's the thing. Okay. Do not ever be afraid to try and fail. That is how we learn the most. I wish it weren't that way, but it's just the way humans are hardwired. So expect that some things aren't going to work out there. You're going to try things and it's not going to happen. Every single failure in my life ended up pushing me in a direction I never would have thought of, that I was much happier in going, and I only could see it in hindsight looking backwards, right? So just go out there and whatever calls to your heart, whatever ideas come to your head, follow those passions. And if it ends up being a dry well or a dead end, no harm or foul, because you still learn. You take that knowledge and you go in a new direction. And sooner or later, it all comes together and you find out where you fit. You will find your place. And if you have in your heart and mind to be better, to make the world better, to do something better in life, you will achieve those goals.
That is some solid, solid advice. And guys, thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. Thank you, Mike. Next week, we have Italian Resistance World War II spy. Margarita Frey is going to be speaking to you guys, talking to her about her story, 96 years old. Rajan Sheth, one of the founders of Gmail and the Google Drive and AI we mentioned. And Dr. Sanjay Chopra from Harvard Medical School to talk to you guys. So thank you, Mike. Before we let you go, I'm going to unmute so everyone can say thank you, and then I'm going to end the meeting for all. So can we all say thank you to Captain Michael Hawk for speaking to you guys today to inspire and educate you guys. Thank you so much, Captain. We appreciate you greatly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.